It's 8:10 now. Good morning. Well, last night, the South Summit School District held its annual scholarship gala on the fun with an update on that, as well as some other ongoing issues. I have the superintendent of schools, Chad Sorensen. Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. So the scholarship gala, this was about handing out the college scholarships?
Yes, it is a fun event that we've held for the last 3 years under the direction of our foundation board. And it has multiple purposes. First, there's a lot of fundraising that happens during the gala. And then we are able to award scholarships to students, both community partners that are giving scholarships from the local Lions Club to Camas Valley Storage, et cetera, give their community scholarships. And then our community foundation gives a scholarship to students. And the criteria is simply that you've applied for 10 scholarships is the maximum that you need to apply for, and that you participate in a service project, and then you're eligible to receive a $1,000 scholarship. And over half of our senior class met that criteria, so we're excited about that.
So any idea how much money you handed out in scholarships?
I do. let me pull up that email really quickly. I thought I had that. I apologize. Just interestingly enough, we received $5,000 from our silent auction, $22,000 from our live auction, $20,000 in a scholarship paddle plus another $15,000 match, and then about $93,000 was raised before the gala. So the event was approximately $155,000.
Wow, that's impressive. So that's
it is very impressive. I feel today, you know, as a parent, how when your child does something that you're so proud of them for doing, that is the value and the love and appreciation I feel for our community today, because I know they're investing in the future of both economically and for the students to achieve their goals.
So is that the amount that would then be handed out next year?
Yeah, some of that money may even be used for this year. It's interesting because of the dynamics of our community, many of our students defer and sometimes don't attend college for a year or two. So there's money set aside for those, when those students return.
So any of those seniors then, again, that met the criteria, they were guaranteed $1,000, huh?
Yeah, that's the first and number one goal of the foundation, is to help students to pursue their higher education dreams. And it's interesting, as I was looking at some statistics, we've had an 85% growth from 2016 to 2019 in scholarships awarded. And I think a lot of that is just the incentive of, okay, if I apply for these 10 scholarships, I'm guaranteed for sure $1,000 towards my first semester. And then when you apply for additional scholarships, chances are you're going to get additional scholarships. So that's been really fun to see that accelerate so much in those 3 years.
Yeah. Anything you can tell us about this year's class? I mean, graduation's coming up May 23rd.
It's one of our smaller classes, and graduation is scheduled for the football field, but as we're looking at the weather, it's not looking so great. And the de jure has come to the high school and has said that they're willing to donate their beautiful facilities in case we need to hold graduation inside, which would make it possible for our graduates to have more of their family there than it would if we tried to move into the high school. So we're excited about that. Most of them have plans for post-secondary in their future, and the counselors have been tracking where they're planning to go and when they're planning to start those experiences. And we're excited that some of them are pursuing trades and professions in those workforce areas, and then others are pursuing everything from medical to teaching to engineering.
Yep. Last day of school for the rest is a half day, May 24th. Silver Summit goes until May 31st. How come the difference there?
Because of the blended learning, where the students have more control of their pacing and the place and the time of their learning, we've had more holidays throughout the academic year, And so we start earlier and we end later because we want to have those students to have as much flexibility as possible.
Okay, let's see. Any sports results that you wanted to brag about?
In our last board meeting, we did have three students that have received academic all-state honors, which means they play three sports during the year. And in those three sports, they are at the top of their class and receive from the Utah High School Activities Association academic honors. And so we're very excited about that because that is what we're trying to foster. First, you're a student, and these extracurricular activities really benefit and help you. And so if you can achieve both in the classroom and on the court or on the field, that is our goal. So it was fun to celebrate those students that achieved that high honor. And we're doing well in track. I don't have those statistics in front of me, but we are doing well. And baseball is a tougher sport for us because we're just not able to get outside and onto the field very early, especially after this winter. But they're doing well, and then our softball team always does great. And this year is the first year in the 3A category, and so it's been good for our teams to have some more challenging competition.
Okay. Let's see. It's budget season. How's that going?
Oh, we love budget season. We finalized or finished up negotiations with our negotiation team. Now, the associations haven't approved those, so I'm not at liberty to release the details. But we are all committed to moving forward and being able to offer the competitive salary that our teachers deserve and also remain within the budget constraints that we have locally and as a state. We've had interesting conversations because we know some of our districts, especially in the Wasatch Front and even our neighbor Park City, has stated publicly that their starting teacher salary would be $50,000. And we've looked closely at that because we know we need to be competitive, especially with the cost of living. But one of the things that our faculty and staff have really valued and appreciated is the insurance and the benefits that we offer. And so we've had really good conversations on, you know, where do we place our emphasis? Do we move more into insurance and premium sharing and put that money onto the salary schedule? Or do we have a slightly lower salary schedule but be able to continue to offer the insurance benefits? And so that's been one of the interesting conversations that I think will continue to happen. And it's an interesting philosophical conversation to be engaged in.
So for the coming school year, though, the insurance will remain as it has?
At this point in time, that is our plan.
Okay. And I know you say you can't talk about the compensation, but can you tell us if they're getting a raise?
They absolutely are. And they deserve it. And I wish we could give more, but we have done everything that we can to give them the very most. And I think as we've worked together, the faculty and staff that have different associations recognize that we're committed to being team and unitedly working for the best of our students and feel comfortable that we are giving the very most that we can towards compensation.
Yeah. So what did your health insurance costs look like?
We had a very good year in our pool, and we team up with some other school districts, and it was just over 2%, which is very good compared to years when we've had double-digit increases in the past, so we're celebrating that.
Yeah. And in terms of the budget, no tax increases being proposed?
At this point in time, the board is not planning to do truth in taxation.
Yeah. You and I had talked a while back in terms of how difficult it is, especially for those teachers just starting out in the industry to find affordable housing. And at some point you had said that maybe that's something that the school district looked into. Have you guys gone any further about plans for providing some kind of teacher housing?
You know, we haven't, besides the conversation, but this year more than ever, that conversation seems to happen on a regular basis. And we have some teachers right now that are planning to come to the district, but are in the process of trying to find homes. So I'm going to reach out to all of the listeners. If you happen to know of homes that are available, contact our district office and let us know. We're looking for apartments, we're looking for homes. Some of them have a partner and some of them are single. But housing is becoming very concerning. And we were talking just the other day, and we really believe that if we had a fourplex, that it would be filled completely all of the time.
Yeah. The TSSA, this is the Student and Teacher Success Account. It's what the Utah Education Association had supported to create as part of a compromise with last year's, the 2018 legislature, to deliver new funding to education. Part of that compromise was an agreement to direct significant new, again, funding. For this year, TSSA is going to have almost $34 million plus the $65 million from last year. We're talking about nearly $100 million of ongoing funding. This is what you are using then to help pay for teacher salary increases?
We are only allowed to use up to 25% of that, of our district allocation, towards the salary schedule. We can also use another 5% of it for retention, and then the remaining funds go directly to the school. The district Board of Education approved a framework in which how the funds could be spent, and then the principals put together a plan of how that they want to spend that money. And the criteria is that based on the goal, they need to improve by 1% in whatever category. So let's say the focus is on third grade math and it's on end of year testing. There needs to be a 1% increase in that focus. The legislation left it very open that we could use those funds for multiple things, including end of school year programs, summer programs, extended day counseling, mental health support, et cetera. And so I know our principals are having conversations with parents and colleagues and faculty and staff in their buildings to start preparing their plan. And as they get those plans prepared, they will have those additional resources. But the primary purpose is to be able to give building principals funds that they have the responsibility for to move the needle in academic performance.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand a percent here and a percent there, but at some point you're going to hit, 100%. I mean, that's unrealistic.
Well, and at that point, you choose additional categories to focus on.
Okay. In terms of... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're not locked into that same goal every single year. You're able to update and revise your plan.
Got it.
But again, the focus is, let's improve, and principals, here's the money that you now have access to, you didn't have before, to do what you feel is necessary to move that needle in your building.
And in total number of dollars, how much is the South Summit School District getting out of this fund?
It works out to be over $100 per student.
Oh, that's great.
And I didn't bring Kip with me today. I wish I would have, because he has that number memorized, but it worked out to be over $100 per student.
Okay. Also wanted to ask you about the RISE testing. Can you tell me what the latest is with this?
It has been a challenging year. What we have heard from the state office is that there is validity in the scores that they are receiving. To be focused on allowing this year to be used for the teachers and the students to measure their progress. Now, it is not determined whether or not those scores will be used for school grading or for any type of state accountability. That's being under discussed, under consideration. But for sure, they want to give us the data so that we can use it to measure student progress and growth.
So at this point, we know the students are not having to redo tests that haven't been able to get through the servers?
Yes, but I was speaking to one of our coaches, and she was saying how constantly she's working with students and the test will open and it won't be formatted correctly, and so you have to close it down, restart it, and then it'll reload correctly. So there's just been situations where the server has been down, where people have been ready to test and have sat there and waited. I mean, we've tried to use the time constructively, but up to even a couple hours before it's been able to log in. The system's been really slow and sluggish, so you're waiting quite a while in between responding to questions, which can affect your ability to test well.
Yeah, and I guess most concerning is just the students losing valuable classroom time.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is the frustration. We want comparable data. We want to know how our students compare to those within the state and outside of the state. So end-of-year testing is a good thing. It's just changing platforms and not having the consistency is the frustration that I'm feeling. I would like to decide what it is we're going to use and stick with it so that we are able to measure longitudinally the success and improvement of our students.
Yeah, I guess it just gives credence to the adage, you know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Somebody thought that the SAGE testing wasn't good enough, and we moved on to this, so.
Well, and what's interesting is the questions are probably fairly close to the SAGE questions because the questions are actually owned by the Utah State Board of Education, and then they're fed into different testing platforms, and so this is a different testing platform. The test questions themselves are really those same test questions that we found in SAGE.
Okay.
So that's where it gets really frustrating. By the way, Kip texted me. We will be receiving $280,000 in our district from the TSSA fund.
Okay, appreciate that. Any upcoming board meeting that people should know about?
In June, we will have two board meetings on the 2nd and the 4th Thursday. The 2nd, we will be receiving information about the budget, and some education and information. And then on the 4th Thursday, the board will be approving the budget.
Okay.
And also, just a quick note, if you come into the district office, you'll be able to see some architectural renderings of what the inside of the new high school will look like based on the bond passing and us building that after November. So okay. We invite people to come in and check that out so that they know what they're voting for.
All right, Chad. Hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. I sure appreciate all you do. Have a great day.
Chad Sorensen is the superintendent of South Summit School District. KPCW News Time now, 8:28. It's 8:29 now. Good morning. With the Park City Council meeting Thursday for its regular meeting in the studio with a preview, Park City Manager Diane Foster, along with Budget Manager Nate Rockwood. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see. The council having a work session, Diane, to discuss the use of the Quinns Junction Sports Complex for two nonprofit organizations, the Summit Land Conservancy and Mountain Trails Foundation. Both groups looking for long-term space for their operation and want either to lease or buy space there. So what are we talking about? What space are they interested in?
They're interested, let's see if we can give you a map. If you, as you're driving into Quinns Junction, before you get to the ice arena, if the softball fields are on your right, there is a facility on your left that is the city's maintenance building. And in the summer, I think there might be a pod there or some kind of storage, like an 18-wheeler box, right there right now that Mountain Trails has been using. And Mountain Trails keeps their groomer that the city provided to them in that maintenance building, and they're looking to use that property right there, which is, as part of the Quinns Junction master plan, is planned long term for additional fields. But that hasn't been something we've moved quickly on, and the folks who I believe will see former Mayor Jack Thomas come in, I believe he's donating some time to work with those folks. It actually provides for the fields to be able to be still built.
Okay, so are the two organizations sharing this space? Are they two separate requests?
They've come in together as a team, and they're requesting a space together. There are deed restrictions on that property that require it to have an educational component, and so both of them are proposing that would be, I think both of them do a lot of education. I know I learned all my trail courtesy kind of pieces from Charlie on the radio, so I think they both do have education missions.
Okay, again, so we're leasing or selling, or what's the plan?
We're just bringing it to council for their consideration. So while normally property pieces would be done in closed session, where they are asking for a piece of city property. The council just wants to first be able to hear from the public about what they think about that. Should it be something in staff that we want to provide to those organizations? And the staff report provides some examples of other situations where we've done public-private partnerships.
All right. With the big snow year, there's been some worry about what spring runoff might look like. There's a staff report from Emergency Manager Mike McComb and Streets Manager Troy Daly showing that the melt pattern so far has actually been slower than average. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's actually a fabulous thing. We've been really lucky, and although I listened to the weather forecast this morning and I hate that it's going to snow this weekend because I'll be at Jordanelle camping. However, it is really helpful for the stream levels, because the slower melt, right? These couple days we're getting some good melt up there, but it'll slow the melt a little bit this weekend.
Have we seen any incidents of flooding at this point?
Not that's been reported to the city. There was one in the county where they had some stream overflows, but our folks have been watching it every day. And in fact, City Council Member Nam Worrell recently did a ride along. There are 32 spots that they check every single day in the stormwater system to make sure there isn't runover.
All right. Transportation Department bringing a request to the council to increase funding for a service contract related to the State Route 248 corridor. I believe this is the widening project. An addition of more than $82,000 that brings the total project to almost $1.6 million. This is related to the environmental assessment that we've got to do?
It is related to two things. One is the environmental assessment and some discussions that the mayor, Alfred Knotts, and I have been having with UDOT around wanting in the future to be able to run shoulder running buses on there, as well as providing additional pedestrian and cyclist access on that road. So in order to accommodate that future potential, the environmental assessment had to be modified a little bit.
Okay. And I understand that this extends the length of the contract for two more months to look at that further?
It does.
All right. We've got over 2 years in terms of this assessment. How come so long?
If we want to use federal dollars, which come through UDOT, we absolutely need to go through all of the environmental processes that the NEPA, or the National Environmental Policy Act, prescribes. And so this is a UDOT project that they are allowing Park City to basically be the lead agency on, it with a close partnership. And Alfred Knotts has been doing a great job with his team on that one. But in order to get that kind of money, we absolutely have to go through and make sure we're going through all the steps. And the steps aren't just there to make more process. They're actually to protect the environment and make sure that where we're going to be spending a lot of taxpayer dollars, even though they're federal, we all pay federal taxes, it's important that we make sure we get it right.
Best case scenario, when would we see any improvements on 248?
Well, fortunately, we're seeing improvements, one starting right now with the 248 tunnel, and that's being funded through the transportation taxes that the voters put through, that Summit County had, and we appreciate that partnership. We'll be seeing, I expect 2021 would be the first we'd probably see any digging. You know, we'll probably be more in the 21-22 timeframe. And because we're in the environmental assessment phase, they'll probably take this project in phases, but we don't know what those look like until we get through the current phase.
Yeah, at one point, Alfred and I had talked about, just as we saw on Interstate 80 with increased traffic, we saw a wall built there. That could be a possibility for those homes along Prospector there?
I haven't seen anything in any of the reports at all that would suggest that.
Okay. And then in terms of that the tunnel that's going on, do we have any kind of soil issues there?
We may have soil issues, and I think the team's prepared for that. And I should say, on the idea of would we have a sound wall on Prospector, number one, I haven't heard anything. But number two, there is a lot of public process in this, and you'll be hearing a lot coming up in June. Opportunities, open houses. We're working on a video to show people exactly how it would work. And then there'll also be city council meetings. And throughout this whole process, it does put the public first.
Transportation also requesting about $178,000 for bus shelter improvements and a bus shelter accessibility study. Is this for certain bus stops? Or are we talking about all of them? Are we adding some? Or
we are initially focusing on six of those, and they're the highest use ones. And ADA is definitely, the American with Disabilities Act is definitely a priority on this one. And this is not only design, it's also engineering. So that at the finish of this piece of this project, we could go out and put it out to bid to actually construct the project. So in some ways, it's from a bus shelter perspective where the construction isn't that significant, this is the hardest part of the project.
Okay. Is it just allowing the accessibility? It's not about sheltering the people that are actually using them?
Oh, it's absolutely very much about sheltering the people. There's some pieces in the report about when you improve bus shelters, you increase and you increase bus utilization, just like we saw at the MARC in the library. So if we make them safer, I believe our bus stops are safe for people, but we will be looking at lighting in those, as well as if it provides a shelter, someone's going to be more willing to go out on a cold winter day and wait for the bus.
Let's see. Wanted to ask you about the professional agreement that goes before council for the affordable housing architect services at 100 Marsac Avenue. Two parcels the city owns there identified for single or multifamily homes. Can you locate the property for us?
Sure. That property is, if you come down the Mine Road before you get to Ontario Ave, so let's say you're coming down from Montage and you're approaching kind of the Hillside Avenue area, it's going to be on the right-hand side before the two houses that Habitat built.
Okay. Let's see. Let's turn to you. Maybe you could answer this. Nate, the finance staff recommending the city council approve a 2% credit card services fee for transactions greater than $5,000. Is this for the people? Oh, this you're going to answer this, Diane. Is this for residents, or is this for transactions that the city does?
This is for residents. So a few months ago, the finance department started looking at how can we improve customer service. And one of the pieces is that we currently don't accept credit cards for over $1,500 because we don't charge a fee on that. And so that's we pay an average of 2.6% in fees. And so that's then the taxpayers picking up the difference. What the team looked at, however, that being said, if you've got to come in with a check, you've got to find out where in the cobwebs your checkbook is in the first place. And we wanted to make sure we updated that and made it easier for people. Now, that being said, if you've got a $5,000 building permit, we don't want to put that burden on the taxpayer. So that the team is recommending that if, let's see, I think it's over $5,000, that we would charge a fee for that. So where we're launching this month, the online permitting software for a building department, now you could do the whole thing online. Prior, if you had an expense that was over $1,500, you couldn't pay for your permit online. This will actually end up saving the city an estimated $11,000, and a lot of that is in staff time. It takes us a long time to process a check, and a credit card is easier for the city, but we believe it's primarily, and the reason we did it is to focus on customer engagement.
Okay, this is mostly going to impact contractors then.
Contractors, homeowners, the number one builder in the state is actually owner. So we do have a large number of owner-builder projects in the community.
Okay. Nate, when you presented the tentative budget for fiscal year 20 to the council, Councilmember Steve Joyce had some concerns about the projection tool that you've been using to predict where we're going to be in the next 10 years, and it seems we're always in the red. And, of course, I have seen that over the last couple of decades. You had said that the council has not instructed you in the past to take action to prevent that from happening, but rather address issues when they arise. So what strategy is better?
Well, I think, first of all, we're not always in the red. We're always forecasting that we will go into the red if we continue on the same path because of property tax not having that inflationary component and that being such a big portion of the general fund. I think we've put a lot of tools into place. We run what's called the budgeting for outcomes or priority-based budgeting. That really is when you have to make cuts that you make those based on the highest priorities. So that's a tool that we've put in place. We've been running for several years, but we really haven't had to use in a cutting way. But that's really primarily a tool used to do that. In addition to that, as you hit that point, that's kind of when it triggers just a whole list of what different types of things do you want to do. Do you want to cut a service? Do you want to increase a fee so that, say, maybe recreation pays a little bit more of what recreation costs? Or do you want to go to something like a property tax and say, we've never raised property tax before for the general fund. Maybe it's time now that we raise that just to keep up with the inflationary costs of delivering services. So there's a lot of different tools you can have. It's when you're showing that in the next 2 to 3 years, if you stay on the path that you're on, that you might go into the red, it's hard to go in and say we need to cut services now, because it's hard to forecast what the economy is going to do. If we took a five-year average of what our economy has done in the last 5 years, sales tax has grown in the, 8 to 10% per year. If we forecasted that out, we'll never go into the red. But the reality is the economy isn't going to stay at an 8 to 10% growth every year. And so you kind of just have to say, we're ready for that when it happens. We know that at some point the economy is either going to slow down or even just take, there's cycles where it goes up and down. And when that happens, I think we're ready. We used this tool during the recession in 2008 and 2009, and it worked perfectly. And we were able to weather that without reducing service levels significantly, without laying off staff, which prepared us for the sort of the boom that we saw after that.
So when you look at forecasting a property tax increase, I mean, when do you anticipate that conversation happening?
I would say that we would anticipate that happening when it's needed. I think there's if we know that we had a good revenue year this year because the ski season was so good, so we know that those numbers will come in good. We always, when we're preparing the budget, we're preparing it in the middle of the ski season, so it's hard to actually forecast what our ending revenues are going to be. We still don't know exactly what that number is, and so we can adjust that each year. But I think that we have all the tools in place. We have the right mindset in place that we can take that issue as it comes, and it's not going to surprise us. And I think that's why we show that tool and we show that graph.
So are you just going to cut that out in the future?
No, of course not.
Again, because it's like it's just kind of predicting, doom tomorrow, and yet it never happens.
And there's reasons for that. There's different points along the way. One of those factors that goes into the general fund is really like things like building impact or building fees, and that swings so greatly. So it's been as low as $500,000 and it's been as high as over $3 million. So when you're trying to forecast what building growth is going to be and how that fund is going to come, how that money is going to come in, a $3 million swing from year to year can make it look like you're going to be in the red if you forecast that low and be on the very safe side. If you forecast that high, you can go for 10 years. So we kind of try to pick a safe spot so that we kind of know this is what it could look like.
This week you're going to be focusing on the five-year capital improvement plan. So what are we talking about there? Because that's kind of the dumping grounds, right? I mean, if there's money left over, it goes into the capital project.
Yeah, on the general fund side, that's true. There's also capital projects in the water fund, in the transit fund, in the redevelopment authority, which is what's paying for all the affordable housing projects that we're doing. So it's all of those funds combined. Over the last year, the big focus was on how to get that Treasure Hill bond as low as we could. So we went through an extended exercise of looking at all of those capital projects, deferring some projects, cutting some projects. That still has an impact on what our five-year capital plan looks like. So right now, what we're really recommending is holding to that capital plan that we ended up with last year. We're not recommending any new projects. That doesn't mean at all that we're not doing projects. We're doing significant amounts of projects, primarily focused on transportation, on water improvement projects, on affordable housing, and then also the Arts and Culture District.
So did the Treasure Bond, did that push back the Arts and Culture District?
No, it didn't. The Arts and Culture District had has its own funding source through that new transient room tax, and so we didn't touch that. Same with transit. It has its own funding sources, the same as affordable housing. So those critical priorities, as well as water, didn't have an impact on the treasure bond because you really couldn't take those funds and put them towards treasure. So it was kind of more focused on what we've been funding with the additional resort sales tax, which were the street improvement projects, the plazas on Main Street, those types of projects.
Okay, so given the projections, how long are those projects that got deferred being put off for?
You know, there's a few of them. Like, there is a street improvement project on that Coalition View, which is an old town over on the, you know, the east side of Marsac, where we did the engineering, but we held off on that. That would probably be the first one that would go back in. But right now, I'm not seeing that we would do that in, at least for 3 years. But, you know, 3 to 5 years is really when you start to see that funding come back, because we really did leverage those bonds as much as we could to lower the Treasure Hill bond.
Okay. I need to leave it there, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Park City Manager Diane Foster and Budget Manager Nate Rockwood. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Mountain Mediation, a local nonprofit mediation service, co-hosting a film screening next week, and also announces it's moved into new offices. In the studio with details, I have the executive director of Mountain Mediation, Gretchen Lee, along with one of the attorneys part of the organization, Natalie Siegel. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Good morning.
So, Gretchen, maybe you can just start by telling us a little bit about Mountain Mediation, what you do, how it works, and who can use your services.
Yeah, so we've been around since the late 1990s, and primarily mediating in small claims court over at Home Depot. The last couple of years, we've expanded our services. We offer a full array of community mediation for divorces, landlord-tenant, any type of dispute really to avoid the courtroom. And then more recently, we've expanded our programming into restorative justice.
And our restorative justice, so this film, Leslie, that we are co-sponsoring with Park City Community Foundation and the Park City Film Series, is called Long Night's Journey Into Day. It's next Thursday, May 23rd at 7 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. And it is a documentary film from 2000, I believe, was the year that this came out, regarding the Truth and Reconciliation Committee that was formed by the South African government to deal with the after effects of apartheid. And it really has become a model, an international model for restorative justice. The film goes through, it deals with four individuals, I believe, or four different cases that were part of these hearings, and shows the restorative justice process and how it can mend fences even across these really difficult and embedded lines.
So what are the restorative justice issues here in Summit and Wasatch counties?
Oh, we have a wide array of restorative justice applications to our area. Restorative justice can be used in the criminal justice system. You can have a victim-offender mediation where the victim and offender get together and basically get out what happened and come to some kind of resolution that is outside of the court. We have restorative justice practices through, we can use those in corporate settings, you name it. We can use restorative justice practices just about everywhere.
So how is this different than from what you usually do? I mean, is it just the philosophy of it? I don't understand.
Oh, well, no, a lot of the underlying philosophy is the same, and it's sort of an extension. I mean, as a local nonprofit, our mission statement is to present prevent and resolve disputes. And this is another tool, applying these broad RJ principles to help the community at large. There's a huge community building aspect behind restorative justice, because it really addresses accountability while acknowledging, you know, trauma. And as part of the accountability, when you're looking at to see who's harmed, in addition to the victim, most of the time the community has been harmed in some form or shape.
And it gives a real chance for there to be understanding and forgiveness in a process that if it were to go to court, that might not be available.
Okay, so the film screening is what time?
It's at 7 p.m. next Thursday, May 23rd, at the Jim Santee. And we're excited. We have a great panel. We have Erica George, who is a professor of law at the University of Utah, coming. She was on the RGB movie panel, and she's a fantastic speaker. She has she is special counsel to Human Rights Watch. She deals with a lot of women's issues, and she has specific experience with the South African government under Human Rights Watch. We have Lamar Spotted Elk, who is with the Salt Lake City School District, so he kind of gives us our state perspective. And then Roy Parker from Summit County Recovery Foundation, and he is with the drug courts up here, and he gives us our local perspective. And your very own Lynn Ware Peak is going to be moderating.
Okay, and Gretchen, you're going to also be on the panel?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
And one more thing, Leslie, just real quick. We are so excited to announce that we have official office space at the Christian Center. This is new for us. We were previously homeless. So we now have office space where we can offer our services, provide conference rooms, caucusing rooms, for providing mediation and other conflict resolution.
Okay. Are you guys open like 9 to 5, or is it by appointment only?
It's really by appointment only. But Gretchen has now as a place to go work, so she doesn't work at our house anymore.
Okay. And then in terms of what you offer, I mean, people pay on what, a sliding scale? Or?
Yeah, it's a sliding scale. As a nonprofit, if you can't, afford to pay, we provide those services.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And then how many attorneys do you have working with you?
Well, we have a wide array of volunteers now, and there are attorney and non-attorney mediators. They're all trained and on the court roster, which is through the Utah State Courts. So they have to be court rostered, but they don't necessarily need to be attorneys. So if you have any interest in our organization or interest in becoming a trained mediator facilitator, please contact us. Our website is mountainmediation.center. And there's some information on there on how to get a hold of us.
Okay. Otherwise, we'll see you next Thursday, Jim Santee Auditorium at 7 o'clock.
Great. We look forward to seeing everyone there.
Thanks.
KPCW News Time now, 8:54. It's the local news hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:54. Good morning. Well, the Park City and Basin Recreation Departments joining together and putting together a survey about our future recreation needs. In the studio to tell us how you can participate, I have Recreation Manager from Park City, Ken Fisher, along with the Director of Basin Recreation, Brian Hinton. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Okay, so the survey gets released when?
Okay, we've had a survey out for a couple of weeks that was an invite-only survey that's the statistically valid component of that. And that will actually close tonight at midnight. So we encourage people that have received that invite to go in and do that survey. We're hoping to get 400 responses, and currently we're just a little bit short of that number, so it'd be great to hit that 400 number. And then tomorrow we'll open up the survey for the general public to
participate. So who got the survey or the invite?
It was just a random pick by the consultant. They used a third party to generate the invite. So they tried to spread it out throughout the whole community so it wasn't just one interest group focused.
So basically, though, the emails that you have on file, is that how it went out then?
I think it went out to the voter registration log.
Oh, so it was list. A mailed.
It was a mailed invite.
And then there were also some emails that went out as well. So there was a mix of both.
Okay. So where are people going to be able to find the survey then tomorrow who may not have gotten one?
We'll have it in a number of different places on our website, on our social media outlets. We're going to email out to 13,000 people where to find the link, which will be on our website, basinrecreation.org. I know the city is also putting it on their
Yeah, we'll do the same thing. It'll be on our website. We'll put it out through social media, put it out through newsletter, all that. And our website is parkcityrecreation.org.
Okay. So why are you guys doing it together? You have two separate budgets.
Well, you know, really, we try to cooperate together. So this is the second community survey that we've done in cooperation with one another. The last one we did was in 2012. And really, it helps for us to set the priorities for the community. We're able to break it out by zip code so we can see the differences between the two demographics. But really, it is one of the key tools that we use to help plan, you know, facilities in the future. And there's a lot of reasons to do it together. Obviously, large recreation facilities are expensive, and you know, it makes a lot of sense to try to cooperate on those when we can.
Yeah, I think what the top answer from the 2012 survey was new ice, and we haven't seen anything like that happen yet, or have we?
Well, there were really three top priorities. It was additional sheet of ice, additional playing fields, and then an indoor aquatic center. And no, we haven't actually built any of those. I mean, new ice is potentially being built by a private party on the top of Browns Canyon. We did do a feasibility study looking at adding on to the ice arena, and it was, so far it's been prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, and we know over time, I mean, the community has changed a little bit, and we just want to make sure as we look to make investments or see what the community is looking for, that we're still in line with what they want.
Okay, hoping that they don't pick indoor aquatics again. Because again, I mean, that's another expensive project, yeah?
Sure. Absolutely. It is, all right. I mean, I'll be honest, I think probably indoor aquatics would score high, and it makes a lot of sense, you know, wherever that gets built, that there's some cooperation between the two entities. As you know, we try to work together, and we've eliminated, you know, 20 years ago we had fee differentials, and we've eliminated all that and try to really work together to provide recreation as seamlessly as possible to the whole community.
So what is it that you're asking people to prioritize what they'd like to see in the future?
Exactly. I mean, what their interests are, where they're, I mean, as people change with throughout their lives, I mean, right now they might have kids that need more outdoor field space, where those people that were there 5 years ago, those kids might be through school and they want something else. So we want to know where they're at and what they're looking for us to work on providing together.
Yeah. Is it multiple choice, or is there a lot of fill in the blanks?
It is multiple choice mostly, and opportunities to, you know, fill in other and all that. And besides facilities, we're also looking at programs as a component of it to make sure we're meeting the needs with our current facilities and the programs that we provide.
Okay. Again, people then would have until when to fill this survey out?
They have a week. So by next, if it opens tomorrow, probably by, we're hoping by noon for sure, everything will be up and ready to go. And then by the next Thursday, we'll shut that down at midnight. So they have a week to get on it. So hopefully they can take some time and fill out that survey and let us know what they want.
Okay. And then you'll have results when?
It will happen pretty quickly. The consultant we're using says about a week or two, and then we'll have the results in-house, and then we'll find a way to distribute it amongst the community.
Okay. Again, basinrec.org and parkcityrecreation.org?
Correct.
Okay. Hey, guys, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.